Hi, welcome to Lights, Camera, Author. I'm Jim Juno, and this is the show where we talk with authors who write books about classic Hollywood, music, entertainment in general. And I have with me tonight a very special guest. His name is Peter Benjaminson, and he has a new book out entitled The Life and Times of Betty Boop. And for those of you who may not be familiar with Betty Boop, I urge you to pick up this book at Amazon, BN.com, or go to your brick and mortar stores and pick it up. Betty Boop, Peter, let me correct me if I'm wrong, but Betty Boop was the first, she was, I guess, the sex symbol of her day in not just animated movies, animated cartoons, but really in movies in general, wasn't she?
Absolutely, yes. She's been very popular for almost 100 years now because she represented what a lot of women wanted to be like. That is, sexy without being obscene, attractive to men, but also selective in who she might either possibly have sex with, or be the girlfriend of, or get married to, or have children with. In other words, she was an individual woman who controlled her own life. And that's difficult for women, I think, who are forced into various, certainly historically, have been forced into various female jobs, or are forced to have children, or that is pressured to have children. They didn't want them. So Betty stands for independent, excuse me, chokes me up, stands for independent women everywhere.
And in her era, I mean, this is now we're not talking about the Me Too movement here. We are talking about, I want to almost say, the dark ages of feminism. This is a time, first off, she's dressed like, for those of you who don't know what I'm about to say, a flapper. She's dressed as a flapper, which is how women of independent nature back in the 20s dressed, even though she made her debut on August 9th, 1930. And she was dressed in a mini skirt, what you would call a mini skirt nowadays. You saw her garter belt, which was something you never saw in respectable movies. Then you and she, like you said, she was very independent upon herself. Tell me a little bit about her origins. I mean, I did not realize that she was born out of the Jewish, almost, well, the Jewish religion, I guess, of the Fleischers.
Yes, the Fleischers were Jews who had, excuse me, who had immigrated from Germany, luckily before Hitler's appearance. So they got off scot-free, if I can put it that lightly. They were proud American immigrants, and they were very creative in the artistic world. I mean, Max Fleischer invented the rotoscope, which was a device for copying moving human figures, so they could make them into realistic cartoon figures, which was a big help to everybody. But they were what Betty was influenced by, not that much by her sort of Jewish origins, but by the flappers, as you mentioned. The flappers were actually women who were reacting to the end of World War I by declaring their own independence. I mean, at least 700,000 Americans had died in World War I or in the Spanish flu that accompanied it, and most of them were men. So this left a lot of women who were going to have to be independent, whatever choice they really wanted. And it pleased some of them. In any case, the hot kids of the 20s were the flappers. They were called flappers, by the way, because they liked to make noise. They left their winter boots, which everyone had to wear then before global warming. They left their winter boots open. So as they came up the street, you'd hear the flap, flap, flap of their boots. People would go, "Oh, here come the flappers again." But that was their trademark. And independence and being a free woman was their big thing.
And Betty Boop herself, I mean, I did not realize, after reading your book, that there was so much. I mean, I'll say it right out. These cartoons, the early cartoons of Betty Boop, they were not made for kids. I mean, they were incredibly what's the right word? Progressive, I guess, would be for the, not just for the era then, but even by today's standards. I remember, I mean, I was looking at some of the cartoons that you mentioned, especially the early ones between 1930 and 1934. Not only is she what scandalously dressed, but with high heels, garter belt showing, a corset on her, a strapless corset that she wears. But she is also, the cartoons are, you will see things in the cartoons. Her dress flies up, showing her underwear. Her top falls down, showing her bra. The men in the cartoons try to sexually assault her. Matter of fact, I think one cartoon even has, I think it was a Chestnuts, I believe, even has an attempted rape in it, which you don't, which you didn't show that. Even pre-code era, you didn't show that in movies. And here it is, cartoons.
That's why, that's one of the reasons that Betty Boop's cartoons often appeared above the movies that they were allegedly accompanying on the movie marquee. People were very interested in seeing just what you described. And of course, it wasn't shown to that extent in the movies of the day, although the movies of the day were moving forward that way. Various movie. Real women, female stars, were arrested and jailed for ex somewhat exposing parts of their body in the movies. I think Mae West was sent to jail for 7 days in New York for starring in a musical called Sin. Of course, the 7 days had no effect on her. She went back to making profitable musicals. But Betty was in the very forefront. There are a couple of times when, I think you referred to them obliquely when one of the male or animal characters grabs one of her breasts, you know, or you don't see that in most movies today, seriously.
Well, there was
Certainly
one.
no cartoons.
There was one cartoon where she's topless. The only thing she's wearing is a Hawaiian lei.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yes.
I don't recall which one it was, but I remember that, she's wearing a grass skirt and a lei, and that's it.
Yes, that was an interesting one. Sorry about clearing my throat. I get frothed up at these memories. But yes, Betty was imitating the real Hawaiian hula dancers, who also were not dressed very completely. They wore fairly huge leis, which basically covered the area. But you know, they were also dancing very vigorously and very sexually. You know, their hips would go back and forth and toward the audience and back from the audience very fast. It was a sex dance, basically. And the audience loved it. I mean, what the theater owners were trying to do was keep people coming back to the theater. People loved the theater even more in those days than they do now, mostly because there were no alternatives. There was no television. Broadway plays were expensive. You could go to a movie theater and watch two or three movies and three Betty Boop cartoons for probably a dime, you know. Then you could spend a dime on lunch, you know, and then go back and watch more for another dime. For people in the Great Depression, seriously, it cheered them up. They had something to do. The theaters were heated, and Betty was the star.
And I remember, now she was drawn originally, if you're familiar with animators, she was drawn originally by Grim Natwick, who really was the only one who knew how to draw a female form, apparently.
I believe he had studied either he or Seamus Keohane, neither of whom were Jewish, by the way, had studied in Germany fine art, and that involved looking at a lot of nude female models. Not just looking at them, obviously, but trying to draw them correctly. They both, I don't think they were overcome with lust. I've been to some of these places where they exist now, of course, where nude females pose for artists. It's a hard job. I mean, you've got to try and portray what a female body actually looks like. So it looks sexy. You know, it's probably possibly difficult for women to do that, but to do it on with a, you know, a pencil and paper to be good enough for a cartoon is a big task.
And also, this is the first time that a female form was actually shown in animation, in animated form, because before then you had the Disney ones with Minnie Mouse, even though she ran around in underwear and whatever, but she was a cartoonish figure. It was a mouse. Didn't look human.
That's right.
Not Olive Oil. What was the other one that I was thinking of? There was other female characters.
Daisy Duck.
Daisy Duck. That's it. Daisy Duck was another one. But you knew they weren't human. They didn't look human. Betty Boop, she looked human. She looked female. She looked sexy. She looked hot.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and that took a real trick. Grim Natwick, I believe, went on to do Snow White for Disney, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and that was an excellent cartoon. And Disney was the Fleischer brothers' main competitor. I mean, it was an interesting industry at the time. There was Disney in sunny Los Angeles, and the Fleischers in gritty New York, trying to outdo each other for the big cartoon audiences of the day. You know, the Disney people used animals, and the Fleischers, since most of them either lived near Times Square or worked in Times Square, they were constantly accosted to some extent with sexy females and with young men who wanted to accost sexy females. And so it got into their blood. They were bachelors looking at all these women in Times Square, trying to figure out what to draw, and guess what they figured out what to draw.
Yes, indeed. They knew how to draw the boobs and the behind.
That's it, right.
Yeah.
One thing about Betty, though, they made a mistake. She has no neck. If you look at her, her head just sits directly on her torso. That's impossible for a human because then you can't move your head. They made that original mistake and then never corrected it. For a while, they had trouble moving her around to make her look like anything except a robot.
Because she had to move her entire body before.
That's right. Yeah. Which might have added to the sexiness, but probably would have. Anyway, they figured out how to do it, but she still has no neck when you look at her in cartoons.
One thing I learned from reading your book is that she was drawn eventually by the first female animator. Lillian, and please forgive me, Lillian, I've drawn a blank on her last name.
Yes, I'm drawing a blank on it too. I'll remember it at midnight. But she was an employee in the Fleischer Studios secondary department. She did the background animation, and somebody else did the men actually did the frontward ops, you know, not the upfront animations. So after great controversy with people who didn't want any women in their department, men who didn't want any women in their department, Seamus Culhane appointed her. It was Lillian Friedman.
That's right.
He moved her up over great opposition to the main animator's room, and she worked in on a lot of Betty cartoons. It's hard to tell, though, who actually worked. Once you get into this, it's hard to tell who actually did each drawing, because the Fleischers would only allow two animators to be named on each cartoon. Maybe 15 worked on them and might have added their own touches, but only the top two were named. They probably wanted to avoid one of these long things you sometimes see in the movies where it says, you know, starring and then you're in top, all your relatives and everyone in the county. One of those things.
But she was also, like you said, drawn by they only allowed two people's names. Seamus Culhane was one of them, and another gentleman was, because they, like you said, they just wanted to get to the cartoon. They didn't want to waste time to have a lot of credits going on.
Right. But by the way, cartoons were so popular that you go into the theater, you'd see the cartoon would be on the marquee. Then you'd watch the cartoon. Then everyone would love it so much, they'd applaud loudly until the owner directed the projectionist to play it again. And then so they'd watch it again. Then he'd play the second Betty Boop cartoon. Then they'd applaud loudly. Then the projectionist would play it again. Then you'd see the movie that was actually, you allegedly paid to see. So
you saw the cartoons two or three times.
Right.
That's how popular she was, and well, actually still is as a marketing tool. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but you know, the thing about the also was her voice. I mean, nobody had ever heard a voice like that before in a cartoon. I mean, you could not understand what Donald Duck or Daisy Duck was saying.
Yes.
And the amazing thing is that she wasn't even the star of the first cartoon that she appeared in, Dizzy Dishes.
Right.
That was I guess Bimbo was the star of that one.
Yeah. Yeah, she appeared, he was a star waiter at a nightclub in the cartoon. She was a singer, but she was in the background. It was his activities that were Dizzy Dishes was the name of the cartoon. Yes. It was his activities, as that indicates, that the cartoon centered on. And she was put in there because Bimbo was a dog man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a dog, but he walked on his hind legs, you know, played the guitar, could be a waiter in a restaurant, etc. And she was singing on the stage. The original idea was to give Bimbo a dog man, a dog girl girlfriend. So that's what she was originally drawn for. And in that cartoon, she had long doggy ears, but possibly a doggy nose, but the rest of her was human female. Eventually, they never gave her a neck, but they replaced the ears with earrings. So mm-hmm. she looked like a fairly normal female. And then after that, she was still going around with Bimbo, who was always a dog. So people started accusing her, since they were apparently seeming to have sex, the people started accusing the Fleischers of popularizing bestiality. Dog and a woman, come on. And when the Hays Code finally cut into Betty's popularity, I think one of the first things they outlawed was any hinting at bestiality, sex with dogs or cats, whatever.
They made her change clothes too. They said you cannot have the legs showing and having the garter belt fall off every so often. Made her and you know covered her up from head to toe, and also took away the you can't show sexual harassment. You cannot have the stories that you had before 1934. Which really, like you said, ate into her popularity.
Yes, indeed. The Fleischers still found very creative ways to get around that. They had one cartoon in which Betty was a whole nice classical homemaker, cleaning the floor at home, but she lived next to a farm where the farmer was mistreating his animals. So she called Grampy her non-romantic friend, and they began torturing the farmer. They began setting him up in a cellar where they whipped him with a machine that spun the whip around so that it whipped him. But his screaming and running produced fruit for various animals and hay for various other animals. It was the Fleischer's attempt to get back at being stopped and doing all these things, because it was a cartoon about torture and how good it was to torture prisoners. That's what it really was about. But the Hays people didn't do anything about it, probably because the farmer was getting what he deserved. Allegedly, he'd been shown torturing animals. Now it was okay to show him being tortured because he had tortured animals. Just shows you where logic can take you if you push it too far.
And they also got around ways of getting through her longer skirts, longer dresses, by having her, I saw one where she walked in front of a spotlight. And you saw the female form underneath the skirt. And I'm like, okay, so she's got the skirt on, but you can leave nothing to the imagination at all.
No. And in one of the earlier cartoons, she's shown somehow gravity is taken away from the earth. So everybody flies upwards, horses, houses, everything's going, whoa, off into space. But so does Betty's skirt. I mean, it makes sense. There's nothing holding the skirt down except gravity. I mean, if it
Yes.
had been tied to her ankles, that'd been different, but obviously it wasn't. No one wears skirts like that. So her skirt flies up and she flies up. It's just another attempt to make Betty as entertaining as possible.
And we're not talking a quick flash. We're talking about
No.
several seconds
Right.
of the altogether, you know?
But you know, we're making her sound like she's pornographic. She never was
Oh, she
pornographic.
was never pornographic. She was suggestive.
She suggested, yeah, but that's, I think that's how moviegoers liked it. They get, a lot of people don't really want to watch two humans having sex. I mean, sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. You get hot and bothered. I mean, why am I
No.
in here? So Betty hit the right note.
I can always remember when I was a kid, and my dad would always say, "Betty Boop," when a Betty Boop cartoon was coming on, "Why don't you go in the other room? I'm going to watch this one." Okay.
that's a great anecdote. I love it.
Now the voice of Betty Boop. She was voiced by several different women, most famously Mae Questel.
Right.
And for those of you who are, this is what really got me, was that Mae Questel, she was, I want to say between 1934 and 1939 with Betty Boop.
I think she was there for more years than that, but it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
But she also reprised the voice 50 years later in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah, I believe she was in her 80s by then.
Yes.
And Betty was also the same age, but yes, Mae Questel did Betty's voice for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And that was a sexy cartoon also.
Oh, tell me about it. I mean, it's still like one of the most downloaded. There's some scenes which are downloaded on YouTube, which are
Yes, that's
still
true.
popular.
Apparently, my lungs are reacting to the sex part. But no, the not only that, if you saw it on a certain kind of movie drive that existed at the time, allegedly she did other things in the you know on this version of it. So video stores sold out
Oh, we're talking about
special.
Jessica Rabbit.
No, not Jessica herself, but
Oh.
Betty.
Oh,
Betty
Betty.
was Betty was alleged to have done things on this. I was never able to get a copy of it. But that's what sold a lot of it. But it was a very sexy movie if you like
Oh, yeah.
cartoon sex.
Yes. If you like cartoon sex, yes. And it what really got me was also, this is how popular she was, that an actress named Helen Kane sued the Fleischers and Paramount Studios for stealing her act, because she had an act very similar to Betty Boop's voice and singing. She was known as the Boop Boop a Doop girl,
Right.
and she sued them for, I think, what, $250,000, which was
Right.
a lot of money back in 1934.
It was a tremendous amount then. Yes, exactly.
And she basically killed her case when she testified that her act and her voice was hers, creation only. And then that just opened the door for Paramount to bring in another singer, an African American singer by the name of, I think it was Esther Jones.
Yes, also known as Baby Esther.
Baby Esther, yes.
And Florence Mills. They were both African American females who used the boop boopy doop thing, which somehow has a great hold over people. And they used it in nightclubs in Harlem. And the Fleischer animators and lots of the other Broadway actors, they'd go to nightclubs in Harlem after the theater runs. So Helen Kane, who was a big theater, white female theater star, was sitting there one night and heard either Florence Mills or Baby Esther do her boop, boop, a doop thing and watched the audience react, you know, fantastically. Geez, I got Helen Kane said, I got to do this. So she did it, which is, since it wasn't really copyrighted, she could get away with it. But then she made the mistake of going to court to say that Betty and the Fleischers had stolen her. And the court said, come on, you stole it from Baby Esther. You can't now sue for someone else stealing it from you. Forget it. This is a civil suit. Get out of the court. It was a great story, though. That was covered extensively in the New York Times. You know, at the time, they were covering mostly homeless people, people on bread lines, the riots, everything, and wars that were going on in the Depression. To have good-looking, real women debating in court in their finest outfits about who said boop-boop-be-doo first, it's like a feature writer's dream. You know, they had endless coverage. It was great.
You know, mentioning African-Americans, what people may not realize also is that the Betty Boop cartoons were actually the very first time that you saw a lot of African-American performers in what could be called non-race movies.
Absolutely, yeah.
Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway come to mind.
Yes, and those two and Don Redman.
Don Redman too, yes.
Those are the big three. And they really appreciated it because not only they were probably paid for being in the movies, but the big payoff was that the Fleischers and Paramount would arrange for the cartoons to come out in the same city during the same period at which the bands were performing. So you'd walk out of the theater seeing Louis Armstrong in a Betty Boop cartoon and see down the street, oh, there's Louis Armstrong before, let's go there tonight or tomorrow night, whatever. It was perfect and inexpensive to the band's publicity. So yeah, they really liked it. I gotta say there was the, Betty was, I shouldn't say Betty, the Fleischers acted somewhat racist-like in their portrayal of Louis Armstrong. They made him, they had the Betty and two of her boyfriends go to Africa, where Louis was portrayed as a cannibal with a bone through his nose, you know, the usual anti-African stuff.
Right.
Of course, they could get great scenes of Betty tied to a pole while she was being boiled in a pot, you know, and she was writhing around. Anyway, but it was racist for the time. Louis Armstrong didn't object publicly. I'm sure he didn't like it, but he liked the money that he got. And for those days, hitting it right two out of three times was pretty good for the Fleischers.
Well, and also the era that it was in. You know, they knew their audience too. They knew that. I mean, and it was wrong, but it was the era that it was in. That, you know, Cab Calloway was how you animate a person as fluid moving as Cab Calloway, young Cab Calloway was.
Yeah,
you know, and then he rotoscoped him, I guess.
Yes, they must have.
Because he would play a ghost. And the ghost matched his movements almost perfectly. They were really technological achievements for that era.
Yes. Well, the Fleischers had invented the rotoscope, which was actually patented by the federal government. It enabled them to enable their animators to do just that, to make a cartoon character look even like a fluid Michael Jackson type dancer, which was what Cab Calloway really was. He was Michael Jackson, you know, 40 years before Jackson was born. He danced, he almost did the same thing that Michael Jackson did, but he had that long flowing, his limbs were all flowing. It was perfect for a cartoon. He loved that stuff. He wrote a whole book about it called whatever the name of the cartoon was, and me. You know, that was the name of his biography, Minnie the Moocher.
Minnie the
Minnie
Moocher
the
and me.
Moocher and Me, which is a nice alliteration, too. So they liked it. I'm sure Louis Armstrong was upset, but as you can see, you know, there were all the movies around were like Gone with the Wind, where the blacks were just servants, slaves, whatever. Forget it.
That was, like I said, it was, even though it was wrong, you know, it was the era. They knew what their audience base was. You know,
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
well, you know, you saw they did it with Jewish people too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You saw the anti-Semite, almost, I mean, the caricatures of a Jewish person,
Right.
with the long nose, big lips, you know. Yeah, it was wrong. It's a stereotype, which is wrong, but they were Jewish.
Yeah.
And but they knew their audience base, and they
That's
knew what
right.
appealed to them.
Right.
How did you get interested in Betty Boop?
Well, this is actually my 10th book. I've written books about biographies of Flo Ballard of the Supremes. It's called The Lost Supreme. Then I wrote one about, that was so successful, I wrote one about Mary Wells, another Motown star. Then I wrote one about Rick James, still another Motown star. And before that, I'd written the first book ever written in this country about Motown, called The Story of Motown. I was amazed, in fact, that mine didn't come out until 1979, but Motown had started around 1963. But that when I see a gap like that, I think there's a book that needs to be written. The whole thing was, it was starting to fade out a little in the late 70s, but no one's written a book about it yet. So I got into the habit of writing about what's basically black and white show business. Motown, Flo, Mary, and Rick, and Betty were all about that. I mean, she was based on black people and then, but also honored them. You know, there's that same back and forth takeoff, which makes the subject very interesting to me.
Yeah, and why do you think her popularity has persisted? Now they're no longer making Betty Boop cartoons, but she is now a marketing, she's a brand
Yeah.
now.
Well, I think as women continue to be more liberated and, if I can use the word, and more politically active, things like abortion, you know, sexual harassment, Betty was ahead of her time and remains a perfect symbol of what women are trying to do now. She was way ahead of her time then. Now, real women have caught up with her, and they like her as a symbol. I mean, also, but the marketing thing surprises me. One day I went on eBay, and there were 180,000 separate Betty Boop products available for sale. I looked at that several times. I thought, oh, my computer's got nuts. There could be 180,000 products. I keep going back. I think today it's only 57,000. I didn't count it. I cannot explain the discrepancy. But even if it's only 57,000 different products that you could buy today, that's beyond belief. Women love her. There are also something like 75 Betty Boop Facebook pages. Betty Boop, sexy Betty Boop fans. I could go on. There's tremendous amount of public interest in it, probably mostly from women.
Fantastic. Amazing. Well, I tell you what, the author's name is Peter Benjaminson, and the book is The Life and Times of Betty Boop, The 100-Year History of an Animated Icon. You can find it on Amazon.com. It's out now. It came out November 15th. And like I said, Amazon.com, BN.com, or you can go into your brick-and-mortar store, have them order it. Peter, I want to thank you for being on Lights, Camera, Author tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. And if you want to listen to the show, you can find it every Tuesday at noon on WRIR FM 97.3. You can find it online at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and anywhere, any platform that carries your podcasts. Peter, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you.